Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. I'm with my co-host, Stan Friedman from the great city of Atlanta. Stan, how are you today?
Could not be better today. How about yourself, Paul?
Doing well. It's 80 degrees and sunny here in the Woodlands, Texas, and certainly not feeling festive from a temperature standpoint, but it is nice that we're getting into the holiday season. Regardless of what holiday you're celebrating, it's a festive time of the year, but specifically, Stan, I'd like to wish you and yours a very happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah it is. And in fact, I think I posted a Facebook post picture over the weekend of the fabled Hanukkah bush that was under construction in the Friedman household. Since we are equal opportunity celebrants with, you know, myself being a member of the Hebrew tribe, my wife a Catholic, my son an opportunist. He wants to know why we don't celebrate Greek New Year's, but, you know, we do it all in my house.
There you go. That's great. That's great. You know, it is a festive time of the year, but of course, for franchising, we are continue to be under attack with the NLRB ruling. We're under attack with $15 minimum wage and a host of other things that are coming down the pike. And our guest, Lynette McKee, will give us some insight, inside out look at increased minimum wage impact on franchise restaurant brands. But before we bring Lynette on the show, Stan would like to turn the front of the house over to you and get your insight as to what's new and improved and going on in the world of franchising.
Well, it's been an interesting week, Paul. We had we were treated yesterday here in Atlanta to a breakfast conversation about the latest things going on with NLRB and McDonald's and joint employer. Over our breakfast meeting yesterday, we had Bob Crisante, the new president and CEO of IFA, as our featured speaker. And we had quite a turnout for the morning event, as you can imagine. Bob shared with us a little bit of what, you know, he told us things that we continue to hear about what's going on and the impact that today's legislative discussions all over the country at the federal, national, or national, state, and even local levels are having on our business. But I felt and detected a change in tone. So I feel like already I can feel a difference between how IFA is positioning the messaging of what we as an association are needing to accomplish to push back and help the world really understand what franchising is and does. And that there's more of a jiu-jitsu mindset now than just prize fighting all the time. And I think IFA is going to adjust a little bit of the messaging this coming year. And it's going to be a little less partisan, I think, and a little bit more collaborative in terms of how we get out there and try to push our agenda forward to protect the brand and business model of franchising. But as we're seeing in so many other aspects of government and government relations, nothing gets done when people are shouting at each other and not talking with each other. And if I think I feel any change at all between the past administration at IFA and the current one with Mr. Crisante, I think we're going to see a little bit more desire to try to talk with instead of just being embattled all the time. And that's not to suggest that Steve Caldera and what he did for IFA was wrong or not what we needed. We needed what we needed when we needed it, and there's nobody I'd want to be in the trenches with covering my back than a guy like Caldera when you're doing battle. But I think as Steve Caldera had a great relationship with John Boehner and the Speaker of the House has flipped, the new Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, and Mr. Crisante are longtime friends. And as Mr. Crisante is going to do for IFA and Speaker Ryan for the House of Representatives, I think we're going to see a change in tone in how business gets done. And hopefully, the business model of franchising is going to survive and just have to adjust instead of being embattled to the point of existential threat all the time, which is kind of the the weight we've been weathering for this past year and more. So that's kind of a rundown of what I felt was the mood of the day yesterday at the forum. And certainly he had a raptured audience. I mean, you could hear a pin drop in the room. Everybody hung on every word he was speaking. Things are still scary, but as he said it yesterday, it's scary and it's not good, but you know what? We'll survive and we'll adjust. And that's the mentality that the leadership of IFA is conveying, and I think we all need to take that to the street and adjust accordingly as we progress into the new year.
Very good. What else is going on?
Just one other thing I wanted to make note of before we introduce Lynette, because I want to not hog a lot of time this week and spend as much as we can with our guest. But I did want to note that IFA made an announcement on the 4th of December that Little Caesars founders, the Illich family, are going to be and have been named the IFA's Hall of Fame winners this year. They announced that Mike and Marion Illich, founders and the owners of Little Caesars, will be our Hall of Fame honorees at convention. And as most everybody will know, the Hall of Fame Award is the oldest and the most prestigious award conferred by IFA. And it's presented to a member who exemplifies the very best of franchising and who has made significant contributions to the advancement of franchising and the franchising community. There's no doubt that the Illich family, Mike and Marion Illich, are deserving of the award. They've made tremendous contributions to not just franchising, Paul, but also, as Melanie Bergeron points out in their press release, they've worked tirelessly on behalf of the hometown city of Detroit and have done incredible things to help bolster. In fact, they moved to Detroit back in the 80s when most people were starting to leave. And then the development in the city of Detroit because of the good of the benevolence of the Illich family is unbelievable. Little Caesars is arguably the largest carryout pizza chain with locations in all 50 states and 18 countries. And it's interesting, they don't, on their website or almost anywhere that I looked, I cannot find a number of units posted anywhere. But one thing that does jump out on their website, and with a tremendous amount of pride, is that they do boast having 353 veteran-owned franchises, which I thought was great to see as well. You know, my history with that company goes back to a guy named Bob Mazziotti. I don't know if you ever knew Bob, Paul.
No, I don't.
In my early Blimpy years, I used to see Bob as a real trooper at all the IFE and all the shows and expos. And he'd been with Little Caesars for years and years and years. He passed recently in the last couple of years, but he headed up U.S. development for them. He was a multi-unit owner himself. And one year when I went to visit Bob when I was in Detroit on other business, he and Dan Ducharme at Little Caesars arranged for me to have a tour of the Fox Theater, which the family, the Illich family, owns as well. And what a treat that was, to see the green room in the Fox Theater in Detroit, where every inch of real estate in that room is covered by signatures of those who have performed there. So you'll see Bob Hope and Jimmy Durante and Jerry Vale and Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber all in the same room. I mean, the whole room is just filled with autographs of people who performed in that theater. You feel a real energy when you walk into that place. But it's just one of the many things that the Illich family has done to improve life in the city of Detroit, their commitments to sports and, the Red Wings and Comerica Park. You can just go on and on and on. So deserving are they of this honor that the IFA will bestow upon them, and I can't wait to see that award presented at convention in February.
We talk all the time about sustainability. And it's so timely, them receiving the award this year, as pizza continues to be a hot industry segment in franchising here so many, many years. So the sustainability of the industry segment and the model they've created, as they say, the biggest form of flattery is replication. And people are doing it, and there's more and more of those brands, and they're surviving and they're thriving, and that's just great. So one question I have for you, Stan, did you sneak your signature on that wall in the Fox Theater?
If I did, I wouldn't tell you, and if I didn't, I wouldn't tell you either.
Stan, I have two word of thanks before I introduce this week's guest. First, I'd like to thank John Francis, who was our guest last week, and we invited back after the new year. He gave us tremendous perspective on the issues facing franchising, and especially from the a franchisee's point of view, and also from an inside look, as he is a board member on several different large national franchise organizations. So, John, I thank you. I also want to thank whoever has nominated me 2 years in a row to the Small Business Influencer Awards, and I was informed last week that I was again named for the second year in a row in the Top 100 Champion Small Business Influencer Awards by Small Business Trends, and I really appreciate it, and I treasure the honor because I do try to help small business owners, whether they be franchise or independent business owners, everywhere. So thank you for everybody that voted, but more specifically, thank you for the individuals that nominated me to even get me in the running.
Man, congratulations. And congratulations to you for that, Paul.
Thank you. And talking about, you know, awards, this week's guest is Lynette McKee. And several years back, I think it was 2011, she was awarded the Bonnie Levine Award by the IFA, given to the outstanding female executive in the franchise industry. Lynette has also earned accolades from the IFA Women's Leadership Council, Women's Food Service Forum, and the Griffin Report. She's a very avid volunteer, giving her time to increase education and women's leadership opportunities in both franchising and food service industries. She serves on the IFA Diversity Foundation. Her past board and committee participation includes the IFA ICFE Board of Governors, Women's Food Service Forum Board of Directors, National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation Board of Trustees, NRA Board of Directors, and the IFA Women Franchising Committee. She's a two-decade-plus industry executive, especially on the food service side. Welcome, Lynette, to Franchise Today.
Thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate it. Congratulations on your award. And hello to my friend Stan, who we go back probably to our early days in franchising. So we've both been around probably longer than we want to say.
In fact, Lynette, if I'm not mistaken, as Paul just reminded me of your receiving the Bonnie Levine, you walked the stage for that award, I believe, the same year that I got honored with the Ron Harrison Award.
I did, or we did. That's correct.
So
yeah,
and
you know, can you believe it will be in February? It'll be 5 years.
I can't believe it. Time seems to be moving a whole lot quicker in these later years in life, Lynette. I don't know if that works the same way for you or not.
No, it goes by really fast. We always say that after the 4th of July, then it's January. So just don't blink twice.
I think we're just going to keep the tree up this year and not even have to take it down and bring it back out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I'll admit, we didn't take our tree down last year. No, we did. We just moved it. We carried it up the stairs into the attic, almost complete, covered it to give it a shot this year and see how it looked. We took it down, plugged it in, added a couple of ornaments, and it was ready to go. Definitely saved
us
a lot of time.
That's smart.
Yeah, if you have access like we have in this home with a staircase that actually goes up into the attic,
it works.
I took advantage of that. Anyway, Lynette, the title of this week's show is an inside-out look at increased minimum wage impact on franchise restaurant brands. And you've got a long, illustrious career with companies including Dunkin' Brands, Burger King, Denny's, Checkers, Metromedia Restaurant Group, and been very involved, obviously, in the National Restaurant Association. And it seems to be the focus, obviously, of a lot of this is on the restaurant brands. If you would, give us a little bit of an overview of what you're seeing and how it's affecting, you know, food service brands of all sizes.
Well, and what you just said actually is a key part of this, of all sizes. Some of the larger groups that I'm currently doing some work with are able to figure out some other methods. For instance, I actually just read this morning that the California Restaurant Association, one of their key executives said that, excuse me, a lot of their members are beginning to, instead of processing food on site from a labor perspective, they are going off site to try to figure out ways to lessen the labor cost, and if they can do that in conjunction with a cheaper food cost to help offset the balance of the P&L. That's a really difficult problem for them, and so for the smaller operators, they don't really have that choice. They don't know a lot of times how to go out and find cheaper ways of doing business. And so, it's either going to cut to the bottom line of the owner. They're going to have less employees or cut wages or whatever the issue, however they may be able to work through it. And I think technology is becoming into the forefront of that as well. I know there are some full-service restaurants that are now using iPads in their restaurants for ordering. And it's a little bit not user-friendly for some of us that aren't used to in the what you might say the older generation, which in some of the full-service restaurants is really your client base. But to get us used to being able to order and not have somebody live to tell them what we want in the order, but it saves on that as well. But it's going to be an issue, and there are some brands that I think their franchisees aren't growing as quickly right now, and the three of us have been through this for years, because there have always been dips in the industry and issues that we've had to face, and whether it was the funding issue or other things. And I think over time, the franchisors and franchisees will figure out a way to do business, because nobody's going to stop, but there will be a dip in this sort of time frame until some people create the magic bullet for this, and others tap into it and figure out how they can also make it work. So I think at this point it's this is the creative period for people to figure this out. But I don't think the people that have pushed the minimum wage really understand from an ownership standpoint what complications they have caused. And I don't know that they care, but I also don't think that they realize what they've done, because if you have owned a business, you know how little flows to the bottom line anyway.
Lynette, do you think that what McDonald's introduced with the, I guess it's overseas, that they did it right with the kiosk or with the automatic server kind of a format? Do you think it will go all the way to that here in stateside?
Yeah.
Do you think we'll start seeing more like the old Horn and Hart at Automat, Paul? Remember the old days?
Mm-hmm.
Back to the future.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there are some businesses that years ago, not because of labor issues, figured out automation. Food service has been slow in doing that. I think you will see more of that coming to the States. There will be a lot of type of test going on. There are some things that Dunkin' was even doing when I was there, and I left in 2009, but more from a self-serve perspective. So I think you will see a lot of that over the next few years. Technology is going to change a lot, and I think you're going to see people that are creative on the technology side, they will recognize certain gaps, and there will be things that will come to being that we can't even imagine today. I think if you look at 2017, 2018, we'll be living in a completely different environment.
So I know you do a lot of strategic evaluation and help emerging brands, and you know, I know you do a lot of work with legacy companies as well,
mm-hmm.
but you see a lot of early stage people that are not even out to the market yet. How do you guide and direct those companies today, and how do you help them navigate the way forward, given the volatility of these unknown issues? I mean, if you're a large Dunkin' or you're a legacy brand that's been franchising for so many years, you're kind of, you know, you're already in, you're stuck in the peanut butter. You're not getting, you're making adjustments one way or the other. You're either going to maybe get equity money into your business, as Mr. Crisanti said yesterday. You know, private equity has not slowed down one bit in franchising. Maybe private equity companies will be investing in buying back franchised units from companies that have to become company owned again if joint employment becomes more than just the talk of the day, but the law of the land. How do you guide the young ones, though, Lynette, who are first entering the space? And what are you seeing from them in terms of appetite or interest to step back from instead of dive into franchising?
One of the things that I have been doing for the last 3 years, I've been working with several companies. I'm gonna do two parts to this. One is companies that have been in existence for 10 to 20 years. They have anywhere from 20 to 200, give or take, restaurants already operating, and they're trying to decide if they want to jump into franchising. One of the things they don't realize is the upfront cost. And today, as you look at that upfront cost, the technology is going to become a larger and larger piece of that P&L and the dollars they're going to have to put into it. I try to put a little bit of fear into them before we do too much. I don't want them to get down the road and say, gosh, I didn't even think about this. I didn't realize this was going to happen. And talk to them about the goods, the bads, and the uglies. Some companies have decided it's not yet time for them to get into franchising, and then others have said, okay, we understand it. We understand where the pitfalls are. We have the resources to put behind this, and we're going to jump in. What I do also tell them is you can't stick your toe in. You either got to be all in, you got to jump in, you know, past the water, past your head, or you've got to decide not to do this for a while. What I have seen is most of the companies that are beginning to get into this don't yet have their technology just from a POS systems and their, you know, tracking and polling of their restaurants and things that have sort of been historic as far as the technology side of it. If they are not in a place yet to do that, then they're going to have to get up to speed even more. One of the things I try to do to scare them a little bit is to say there are probably at least 500 restaurant concepts out there franchising. And if you don't have your act together, if you don't demonstrate that you can provide the franchisee the type of support that they need, the information, the tools, the systems, the name recognition, the brand quality, all those different things, then, and if you aren't in that top 10 to 20 of that list of 500, then you're going to be probably attracting franchisees that are, you know, B+, B-, C+, or franchisees that you're really going to have to be very supportive, almost be a backstop for them, because they're not going to be operating at the level that you may want to attract in this top 10 to 20 restaurant concepts that can do. So I worked with a group 2 years ago that, and I'm sure some of the people on the call can appreciate this, they didn't even have a formal application process other than to put an application in an envelope, send it out to the prospective franchisee to complete and send back. And I said, as you move into a different generation of age group, they're going to expect technology. And if you aren't even doing your application through the intranet, being able to send information back and forth, that's the first thing they're going to think is that you are not capable of doing that in your restaurant operations as well. And they said, well, most of our applicants don't like to work on the Internet. And I said, then that's your first problem. You're going to need to attract franchisees that have the ability to understand technology, be able to move with the times, be willing to put money into those type of situations. And I'll tell you, Stan and Paul, there are times that I get a deer in the headlights look. And so it has been, there have been a lot of challenges in all from startup groups through those that have been in business for 25 and 30 years. There's still, and I think the restaurant industry has more issues with this than non-food. When I work with clients that are in non-food, they are jumping all over technology. Restaurant companies seem to have an aversion to it for some reason. And I'm finding that more and more as I work with more and more clients that technology for restaurants is very challenging for them at best. Part of it is they don't understand it. They don't know how to wrap it into the restaurant brand. And then another part of it is the cost. And so they sort of think they can operate the way they used to operate. But we're going to move into a new generation of franchisees very quickly here in a new age group. They're going to expect it. And so if you aren't buttoned up and can provide what they feel like they need to be successful in their business, they're going to look elsewhere.
Yeah, I think part
I don't know.
Of it,
Did
too.
Did that answer your question?
I think part of it, too, is as we talk to, you know, individuals that have a successful business and then decide to franchise their model. I know the thing that many of us on the consulting side tell them is that, you know, you're now in another type of business, which, of course, is franchise.
Yep.
But what
yep.
I have found on the food service side, and certainly don't have near the experience you do on the food service side, but what I have found is that they're still, you know, so passionate and so entrenched on the restaurant side that they don't think or not giving attention to you know, what franchisees are going to be doing besides, you know, the restaurant operations. And I think in today's day and age, across the board, you know, today's candidates are more sophisticated and more educated and more technologically advanced than ever before. I would almost think they're commanding technology and might not be even attracted to a brand that isn't complete with technology, both from an operational standpoint, but also from a financial management standpoint.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is in the conversation that I have with franchisors is you are in two businesses, like you said. The other piece of that is, you have to decide, are you a restaurant company that decided to grow and you decided that you would franchise some of your restaurants? Or are you a franchisor, you're in the franchise industry, and your method for growth is a restaurant concept? The way you handle your business and the way you handle your franchisees, the philosophy between those two is very, very different. And I have been a part of groups that have thought one way or the other, but the ones that said, we're in the franchise business, we are here to support our franchisees, our vehicle for growth is through a restaurant concept, but we are here to make sure that the systems, the tools, the product is there to enable the franchisee to be successful. It's very hard for franchisors in food service to get their head around that because, like you said, Paul, they are so tied into food service that they don't realize that franchising is actually a separate business.
You know, it's very interesting parallel in my world, too, Lynette. I tell people that every day. And one of the differentiators about doing business with me at FRM is that we are not a technology company. We are a franchising service provider.
Uh-huh.
We treat our clients the way franchisors should treat their franchisees and realize that it's the technology is the vehicle to provide the needs of franchise community with services. But, the mentality is more about being behind the wheel driving the car than being under the hood building or creating one. And I think that's the real metaphor that works in both places. Hey, everybody, you're listening to Franchise Today, and we're brought to you by the Franchise Foundry. a business accelerator that helps early stage franchise systems stand up and emerge as responsible, sustainable franchisors as they move forward. The Franchise Foundry, headquartered in Houston, Texas, and is headed by my co-host, Paul Segretto. Franchise Today, also brought to you by yours truly and FRM Solutions, where we offer robust, out-of-the-box CRM and content management software solutions tailored specifically to the needs of franchisors for the management of their relationships with both prospective and existing franchisees. And we're talking today with industry specialist, both franchise and restaurant, Lynette McKee. Lynette is a strategic evaluation professional. She's a market development and growth professional. She's a franchisee validation professional. She's a person who, for years, I've described Lynette as being somebody who, unlike Paul or me, when we walk into a convention, it's like a 757 landing. Everybody knows we're there. You see that big bird and you know that he's in the room. Lynette's like a stealth bomber. She comes in quiet. She does her work and she goes. I can't count the number of places I've been where I've heard Lynette has been here and gone already and I hadn't seen her yet. But she came, she did what she was there to do, and she took off like a stealth fighter. Lynette, you said something about technology that triggered something with me too, and I couldn't agree with you more, because I think that as something as simple as an online application, and what it does is and it's, you know, on the face of it, it's an important thing and it's a convenience. But the point you make that I think is worth repeating is that if you don't have those kinds of tools available for somebody coming to your brand early stage doing their discovery and learning about you, and you're going to send them a PDF or you're going to fax them something, imagine fax them something in today's day and age, versus the competition who might be talking to that same candidate, looking at opportunities, because we know nobody looks in just one place, right? They're looking at two or three things at a time. And if one place serves them up a 21st century experience as they do their discovery, and another one is sending them a faxed application, the meta message is huge about the difference between what I might expect in this place if I were to become a franchisee. Is that how you see it too?
Absolutely. As I said, the generation that's now going into franchising is a younger generation. They have grown up with computers and with all of the technology. If you look back what's happened over the last 10 years, some of us in the baby boomer age has struggled to keep up with all of it, but they know it like the back of their hand. My two-year-old grandson can now work my iPhone better than I can. And so as that continues to progress, and those individuals that are in those 20s and 30-year-olds that are becoming franchisees, they expect it. They expect it. We had a guy walk in for a discovery day and didn't have a pen and paper on him. He walked in with his iPad, and I sort of grinned to myself because I knew that he was expecting a very different conversation than this company was probably going to be able to have with him. Mm-hmm. And he was not extremely interested when he left. A good guy with a strong business background, young, early 30s, had a strong financial statement, had strong family behind him. But he was looking for somebody or some group that he was going to be able to speak to in a different language than they were able to. Mm-hmm. So it was an eye-opener for that group, and sometimes companies have to go through those uh-ohs to be able to realize that times are changing and how you did things 10 or 20 years ago are not going to work anymore. Now, I will add the thing that is still the same in adverse to technology is the larger restaurant franchisees that operate in technology, and they are very well versed in how to do it. They also are very anxious to have personal touches. So you have to be very careful to balance the two. They want to have conversations. They want to be able to mingle with senior management. They want to know who's going to be in that senior management team. They still want that face-to-face. So they want the technology to support the tools and the operations that they may be pursuing within that company, but you still have to be very careful to have those personal touches and networking. So we are, with the companies that I'm working with, we do some technology outreach, but we also do that personal touch, because you're going to lose those individuals if they don't have a sense of who they're going to be dealing with and who's making those decisions, whether it is about technology or other parts of the business.
Yeah, there's so many different things I could run on based on what you just said. Because this is right up my alley. I mean, certainly, you know, the experience factor, the customer experience factor is important, but as I wrote approximately a year ago in Franchising World, you know, customer experience is not your positively memorable experience is not just for the customer anymore. It also has to do with the franchisees. And with respect to, you know, the age of the candidates today, what is often missed, I found in franchise organizations, especially when they say, oh, no, my candidate is an older candidate. What they miss is the influencer of the younger generation that might be a son or daughter of the family that started the business, that has been involved in the business, that is very tuned into technology. And as an influencer, they're letting them know, you know, the founders know that, you know, this may or may not be a brand that's behind the times. And it's just vitally important to make sure that you're touching on all the different stakeholders. And as we know, in many franchise organizations, we have the younger generation of the family coming up that's very tuned into technology, and it's very much important because it is a big part of the foundation for the future.
You're spot on with that, Paul. And I have dealt recently with a couple of groups where the operator is the first person to come in that's an older, I will say, in the baby boomer generation. But in both cases, the son and in other cases, the daughter, were very tied into technology, and they were whispering in their parents' ear the whole time, they have this, they don't have that, what about this? And the questions were flying around very, very quickly. So we're in a different time and place than we have ever been, because the older generation wants that personal touch, but the younger person is looking for that. It's basically the tools is what it is. They just want to be able to run their business in a more effective and efficient way, and so they're looking for that to make sure that they're spotting the companies that are going to be forward thinking, so to speak.
And also, you know, a big part of it too is, you know, social media, which we know is massive in the restaurant industry today, as well as, you know, customer review sites and everything along those lines that the older generation are aware of. They're not as tuned into it as the younger generation is, and that's vitally important. I know there's plenty of organizations that I see that still haven't latched onto social media quite like they should. They still want to treat it as a fad, and yet as the consumer population continues to grow, they're communicating in much different ways than me, you, and Stan did at their age. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much high tech and high touch, in my view. It always has been, and I think that's the magic of what our business model really continues to deliver that makes it so unique. It's not one or the other. You've got to have the best of both going. And I've always said it doesn't matter whether I think I'm right or someone who thinks that it's all about one or the other is right. It really doesn't matter at all, does it? It matters what the consumer thinks, and it matters what the marketplace tells you. In fact, Lynette, right in your backyard, there in Orlando is this little organization called Disney World, right?
Yeah, not too far from here.
Who better than Disney organization? I learned years ago how the Disney organization and all of their parks are established to provide experiences for we as adults bringing the kids who are their primary targets. They call them the 3.5s. The 3.5-year-old has an experience at the Disney park that if you walked around on your knees at Disney World, you would see a completely different park than the one that we see shepherding little ones around those parks. So they've got an experience that we expect, and they deliver it. And they've got an experience that those kids expect, and they deliver it. And it's the same thing. It's not one or the other. They've got to cater to both. And anybody in our world today has to do the same. Paul, you got a correction?
No. I wanted to go into the social media aspect which we have. But, you know, as you're talking about Disney, we were there not too long ago with our grandchildren. And it's amazing how much they have brought technology, continue to bring technology to the forefront to make the experience what it is. But, you know, it's interesting because I did some training with an organization that had a young workforce, and it was basically teens into mid-20s. And when I asked them about the customer experience, I asked them, you know, what do you perceive as, you know, excellent customer service? And very proudly they said, you know, we greet the customer when we see them. We take care of them. We try to anticipate, you know, their needs. And then they really got real proud. And then they said, but when there's a problem, we're really there to take care of them. And I said, isn't that all what they're paying for? And that's all basically you're doing is meeting their expectations. And they all looked at me and they nodded their head and they said, yes. And I said, so explain to me in your world, in your short life, what was a positively memorable customer experience that you had? And unanimously, and this was a group of about 35, they all came down to two brands, Disney and Apple. And it's just what you're saying, Stan. You know, these brands are treating these individuals at different levels in order to be able to deliver that positively memorable customer experience. And that's important to know from an ownership, from a franchisee standpoint, because it may be dealing with an age group that's different than our own age group.
Absolutely. And I jumped out there and said, Paul, correction, we might want to share with the audience something that they don't get to see backstage is while we're sitting here conversing and having a great conversation with Lynette, Paul and I are feverishly Skyping or texting each other behind the scenes so that we can keep the train on the tracks here and make sure that we're getting all of the talk points in that we wanted. I just had a quick note from Paul that the word correction came up all by itself, and I thought he was wanting to make a correction. The rest of the sentence followed a few seconds later, and that's why I jumped in and said, Paul, correction?
Well,
so there's a little backstage pass.
and I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, a lot of people don't understand what it takes to do these shows. We're also, tweeting and posting across social media as the show is going on as well, because our largest part of our posting is definitely the like and share is on demand, and a lot of people just can't take the time out of their day to listen live, but I'm real excited that our on-demand listens are rapidly closing in on 200,000 on-demand listens, and that's just, you know, kudos to everybody that's ever been involved in the show, but also now as Stan and I are taking the show to a new level as we enter our seventh year on the air.
So, Paul, you wanted to cover off some more issues as revolve around the NLRB, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, obviously the crosshair, so to speak, the spotlight is on McDonald's. And I just saw that Jack in the Box just got hit with something from the NLRB regarding an arbitration clause with their employees. I mean, it seems the big food service brands are getting hit left and right from the NLRB, and I think as the NLRB might get their feathers ruffled at all the pushback, they might be looking at some additional things. How does the whole NLRB situation, Lynette, with co-employership, so to speak, how do you see that affecting the restaurant industry moving forward?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I've been working with a QSR that's a fairly large brand, and I don't think that, and they have not been involved in a large degree with the IFA, so they haven't been privy to information. I've been trying to feed them information to make sure that they're staying on top of it, to talk to any legal counsel, to make sure that how your field staff is handling franchisees' employees, there isn't a blurred line. But I'm finding that there are a lot of franchisors out there that know it's in the press, but they don't really know what it means. And I know that a lot of franchise attorneys have sent out, here's some basic guidelines of how you should conduct your business, so to speak. And I was talking to a franchisor yesterday that is getting, it's a brand new franchisor, and they were beginning to talk about some things that I thought could be a little bit of blurred lines. And so, number one, recommended them to go to their franchise attorney, talk to them about how they should conduct themselves and keep those lines very delineated. But like I said, they've read about it in the press, but they don't really know. And at one point they were even saying, oh, well, you know, we could help the franchisee hire their staff and we could now, whoa. go talk to your attorney and find out what interaction you can have. Make sure you follow that and, you know, keep yourself out of any kind of media or attention or any of that. And so I think there's still a lot of unknowns. I think the members of the IFA have been very attuned to this. We get a lot of great information from the IFA, but if you don't participate with the association on a regular basis, I think the franchisors kind of see it out in the news, but they don't really know what it means. And I actually had one chief operating officer say to me, is this something I actually need to know about?
You know, just yesterday morning at breakfast when Robert Cresante was addressing us, he was talking about how critically frightening this joint employer issue in NLRB is, that if Bill Marriott, this is an example of Bill Marriott, who is so well known for touring franchised as well as company-owned properties and, you know, touring the properties and going into the back of the house and hanging with people. If he were to tour a franchise property and with the franchisee walk down a hall and see a bellman taking a nap at the concierge desk and saying to the franchisee, you know, that guy is an embarrassment. That guy shouldn't be here. And the franchisee fired him. NLRB could turn that into a major case. And
yeah.
How does a franchisor in this world do the things, and the dichotomy to me is that the things that are responsible things that you need to be doing as a franchisor in supporting and providing guidance to your franchisees are the very things that are going to be challenged as, well, do you see that? That's control. So now you're telling them they're your employees. It's just a dual-edged sword that almost seems like you're in a catch-22.
Yeah.
And
you also have to be careful about what you you as a franchisor write in your operations manuals.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
That's something that has come to the forefront too, is particularly in the HR area specifically, but guidelines of how you operate your business, but not requirements per se, and the language can get sort of sketchy there. And so that's why I refer any of my clients or people that I speak with back to a franchise attorney that has an understanding of the situation so they can give them some guidance on what what conversations they need to have. And then also, I think something that's going to be very important, anytime a franchisor meets with a franchisee in their establishment for any reason, whether it's a review of their operations or just to have a monthly meeting or whatever it is, the documentation is going to be very, very important to demonstrate what kind of conversations they've had, so that if something does come up, we can say, look, here's when we met, this is what was said. And also, I'm recommending my franchisors to have regular conversations with their attorney about it and to document that as well, so you can have two faces of the documentation. I'm being trained, and this is what I'm saying to my franchisee. And so if something does come up, at least they've got that documentation that they can lay out in front of them.
Monette, this is all so, so good, and I am so, so proud that you've been able to carve out the time with your foot up on a high couch or sofa to spend an hour with us today. And
my grandson's Winnie the Pooh chair with a towel on it.
all I can say is that you wear a lot of hats in this world, and grandma or wife and mom, but you are the consummate franchising professional. And Lynette, I don't want to leave without asking you first to tell those who have known of you in the past how to find out more about what Makiko Services are providing today, and more importantly, for those who may hear about you for the first time today, how aspiring people in the franchising and food service world can learn more from you by contacting you directly. So why don't you share with the audience the best ways to do that before we lose you?
Great. Thank you, Stan. I really appreciate that. I have a website, which is Makiko Services. It's all one word, MCKEECO Services.com. You can go to my website there. It will give you a list of the different types of services that I provide. One thing that I do, though, is with each client that I work with, I really do something different. I try to delve into the company and figure out what it is that they actually need. Sometimes we start in a very different place. I operate out of Orlando, as you mentioned, and I can be reached at 407-333-3533, lots of threes, 3533. And my email address is lynette.mckee@mckeecoservices.com. So a lot of different ways to reach me, and I think anybody that has worked with me will say that I'm very responsive. So unless I'm on an airplane or a meeting, I'm usually pretty quick to get back with you.
And Lynette, we didn't get to cover as much as I'd hoped we would today, but you know, there's another thing about you that I'd ask anybody who's listening to ask you about, and that's people development. In the years that I've known you, I've gotten to know people through you who have become close friends of mine, trusted peers of mine, who were trained by you, who were taught franchising by you as one of the best to teach them. Proud as I can be to have one on my own team now in Shaquan Turner, who I wouldn't know but for the fact that I've known you for as long as I have. And there are others. So people development is a big part of what you bring forward, that a lot of people who know what you do, and we've talked a lot about the services that you provide, but along with that comes a really keen and astute sense of who the people are that should be a part of your organizations as well. And your role in helping to develop talent and people that are worth knowing is something that I rank amongst the best I've ever seen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. The people part of it is really very important to me, and I feel like that's what's really brought a lot of the business back to me as I've gone out on my own, is through the contacts that I've made over the years. And it's just a joy to see people like Shaq and others that have progressed in their careers. And honestly, I mean, I've done little things, but they did, you know, I did 1%, they did 99%. So, hats off has to be to them, because they took whatever conversations we had or a little bit of help and ran with it.
Well, thanks again, Lynette. We really appreciate it, speaking for Paul and myself. Thank you for joining us today and sharing your wisdom and your insights with our audience on Franchise Today.
Thank you both very much, and I enjoyed it, and hats off to you for such a great show.
Thank you, Lynette. Well, Paul,
so
what do you...
We talk about you know, customer experience and food service, and just coming across my computer is one of the most Instagrammed restaurants in the country. Of course, our favorite, Katz's Delicatessen in New York. And I had to share that with you because we've had a great experience at Katz's, and we talk about customer experience, and this is just another way restaurants, you know, have to use technology and create that experience, especially for this younger crowd. You know, next week, we're going to continue on the same topic about the increased minimum wage, NLRB, sustainable and sensible franchising, of course, with Catherine Monson, CEO of FastSign. And I'm looking for a little bit of some additional perspective, as we have for the last few weeks, from Shelley Sun and John Francis, and now this week from Lynette McKee. What I'm looking for from Catherine is how some of this may ultimately affect FastSign in the international markets as FastSign continues to go global. And I know that the rules aren't going to be the same in the international markets, but certainly the culture of the organization is going to be affected by it. So it'd be interesting to see her perspective and learn that perspective from Catherine, who, of course, is one of, in my mind, and I know yours too, one of the brightest minds in all of franchising, if not all of small business.
She's a joy to listen to as well, as she tends to take big bite-sized, big pieces of issue and bring them down to bite-sized chunks that everybody can digest. I enjoy listening to her, and she's always most insightful and has lots to share, and she's happy to share it.
That'll be next week, same time, same station, right here, 11 a.m. Central Time, 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Stan, I have nothing else. I mean, we're wrapping up the year. Next week will be our last show of the year, and we'll go into some replays through the holiday season. And we've got some exciting things coming on for the new year. And of course, I am honored always to have you as my co-host here on the show, as, again, we enter our seventh year on the air with Franchise Today. It's just a remarkable journey.
Happy to be here, Paul. I'm looking forward to 2016. Can't believe that we're already putting a lid on 15. What an exciting and fast-paced year it's been, but I'm thinking it was just a rehearsal, if you will, for the year ahead.
You know, yesterday, as I got the little memories thing pop up on my Facebook, it was actually a year ago yesterday that you and I met in Atlanta and really discussed the next phase of Franchise Today. It's hard to believe that was already a year ago.
Well, I would not have known that it was a year already. Hard to believe is right. But it's been a great year, and I'm looking forward to a better one. And every year seems to just go that way. I mean, I think, as I said earlier, as we get older, I think the rules of engagement on the clock change somehow, and time ticks by at an ever faster pace.
Yep,
as it's done this hour, because we're just about there, aren't we?
Yeah, we're right at the top of the hour. We're actually getting ready to close. Remember, next week, Catherine Monson's our guest. She's the CEO of FastSign. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great, great thing we refer to as franchising. Franchise Today is out.